Welcome back to the OU Nachyomi Project and our series on Divrei Hayamim Aleph. In today's year, we study Perek Chaf, Chapter 20. Our series is sponsored with help of the Cyprus Foundation in conjunction with Tanach.org, TANACH.ORG. Pasuk Aleph. Bahi leit Shuvat HaShana, leit Seit HaMelachim. And it came to pass the next year, the time of year when the kings go out to war. This implies most likely the spring. Vayinhag Yoav et Chel HaTzava, Yoav led the army. Vayashchet et Eretz Bnei Amon, he came to destroy or wipe out the land of Bnei Amon. We'll see later on it's referring to the cities of the land of Bnei Amon. Vayavo, and he came. Vayatzar et Rabbah, he put a siege on the city of Rabbah, which is short for Rabbat Bnei Amon, which is Amman, Jordan today. Vedavid Yoshev Yerushalayim. David, in the meantime, was staying in Yerushalayim in his palace, while Yoav led the army in this campaign to the land of Ammon. V'yach Yoav et Rabbah v'yeherseha. Yoav was able to defeat the city of Rabbah, and he destroyed it. This opening pasuk of chapter 20 is a direct continuation of the story which we read in chapter 19, where there was a war between Israel and Ammon after the diplomatic incident when David sent comforters to the new king of Ammon. They were treated as spies. This led to tremendous mistrust between the two countries, which led to a major war, which in the end led to David HaMelech's conquest not only of the land of Ammon, but also his defeat of the armies of Syria, of Aram Tzova and Aram Naharaim. Later in the shir, we're going to discuss why specifically these topics are included in the book of Divrei Hayamim. But first, we're going to discuss the next set of psukim, which describe how Yoav destroyed the city. Pasuk Bet. Vaykach David et Ateret Malkam, Miyahu Rosho. David took the crown, either of the king, from above his head, and they found that the weight of this crown was about one talent of gold, and together with that gold was a very precious stone, and therefore afterwards David used it to put over his head, and from the city he took out a tremendous amount of booty. Now there's an argument among the commentators, what does the word Malkam refer to? Look again at the beginning of Pasuk Bet. It says, Vaykach David et Ateret Malkam. The simplest understanding of the Pasuk is that David took the crown of their king. The word Melech in Hebrew is the king, and Malkam would be the crown of the king. That's the way Radak explains. Other commentators suggest that Malkom might be referring to the god of Ammon named Milkom, and there was a statue to the god Milkom, the god of Ammon. And over that statue, their god was wearing a crown, and this was the crown that David took. The advantage of that approach, this would explain the tremendous weight of this crown. If it's a talent of gold, that's way too heavy for someone to wear on their head. But if this was a crown over the head of a statue of a god, then it would make sense that it could be so heavy. On the other hand, if this was indeed a crown that was over a piece of idol worship, then the Jewish law would be, it would have to be destroyed and couldn't be reused. Then it would not make sense that David would take it and use it over his head. If this was the crown of the king, though, the question remains, why was it so heavy? Therefore, some commentators claim this was a crown that was a permanent fixture on the throne of the king. The throne itself had a crown over the top of the chair, and when the king sat on his throne, a little above his head, was a crown that was supported by the back of the chair of the throne. And then David transferred that crown to his throne. According to any of these interpretations, the main point here, that taking this throne was a sign of the tremendous success of this battle against one of Israel's biggest enemies. Pasuk Gimel. Veta'am asher ba, the people in the city of Rabbat Ammon, in their capital city, Hutzi, he took out. And then it says, Bayasar bamgera, uvacharitzei habrazel uvmagerot, v'chein yased David, l'cho arei b'nei Ammon, v'yashav David v'chol am Yerushalayim. There's a lot of details here in this pasuk. We'll take them one at a time. First of all, he evacuated the people from the city. The question is going to be now, in the next phrase, is this describing what he did to the city or what he did to the people who he took out of the city? If it's referring to the people that he took out of the city, then it's referring to the hard labor that he placed on these people who were evacuated now from the capital city. Either all the people or at least the people of the army that were taken captive. The megira is something which is used for stone cutting. Charitzei HaBarzel is some type of metalwork for iron, and megirot is also some type of chopping instrument. It's not quite clear what it is. If we compare this to the parallel in Sefer Shmuel, instead of megirot, it's magzirot, which would imply some type of an axe. It appears that in either case, these are all types of heavy machinery or heavy equipment for cutting down trees and shaping stones. So again, if it's talking about what he did to the people were put under hard labor and given the work to use axes and do stone cutting and do metal work. V'chein yaseh David, and this David did, to all the cities in Bnei Ammon, and then he returned to Yerushalayim. That's one way to explain the pasuk. The other way to explain the pasuk, which that Mikra brings down, is that it's talking about what he did to the city. He took the people out of the city because he wanted to raise the city to the ground. How did he destroy the city? He used the Megirah and Charitzei Barzel and Megirot, axes and stone cutting equipment. And the Charitzei Barzel was referring to a piece of equipment which is usually used by farmers for the Melacha Avdash, to separate the grain from the straw. It's a very large piece of wood with metal spikes coming out, and you run that over the wheat and it separates the straw from the kernels. If that's the case, these were different utensils that the king used to basically raise the city, to destroy the buildings and raise the city to the ground. By doing this, he ensured that Ammon would understand their punishment and not start up with Israel again. When you take someone's cities and you destroy all the homes and houses, but not kill the people inside, that gives a very strong message, don't mess with us again. To support that approach, we simply have to return to the opening line of this chapter, where it says, "Vayi leit shuvat hashana leit zeit hamlachim, vayinhag Yoav et chel hatzava, vayashchet et eretz bnei Ammon." Vayashchet means to destroy. The word hashchata is usually talking about when I take something and break it or destroy it. So based on the opening pasuk, it looks like Yoav is going on a punishment campaign against Ammon for this whole incident that they started with Israel. And the punishment he's doing, he's going to destroy all their cities, all their infrastructure, but not necessarily kill the people or put them under hard labor. And then finally, in the end of Pasuk Gimel, where it says this is what David did to all the cities of Bnei Ammon, it doesn't say this is what he did to all the people of Bnei Ammon, this is what he did to all the cities. So it could be, he means each city he took the people out and gave them hard labor, or it could be he went city by city and destroyed their infrastructure. After all this, David returned with all the people to Yerushalayim. Now we have the final question, which is, if the opening pasuk claims that David was staying in Yerushalayim and only Yoav went to battle, how could it be that in the next three psukim, it seems like David is there with the battle, because David takes the crown of their king, and David then returns with all the nation back to Yerushalayim? The missing details are found in the book of Shmuel, and here's a classic example of parallel accounts between the book of Shmuel and Divrei Hayamim. The story in between in the book of Shmuel was a famous story of Uriah HaChiti, because while Yoav was fighting against Ammon and putting a siege on the city, and David was back in Yerushalayim, the story that continues in Shmuel Bet Perek Yod Aleph is this famous story of David and Bathsheba. What's happening in Divrei Hayamim, that entire incident is not quoted at all in this account. However, in that account, we find that Yoav later sends to David and says, "I'm about to finish capture of the city. I don't want this capture to be attributed to me. I want the credit to go to you because you're the king." And therefore, he summons David to come to Rabbah and be present when the capture of the city becomes complete. And then David leads the people in the capture of the city and then takes the booty and brings it back to Yerushalayim. This brings up the question of why certain sections are omitted from Divrei Hayamim and included in the book of Shmuel. We'll discuss this very soon. But first, let's finish the perek, because we have five more psukim that discuss several battles that took place against the Plishtim. Pasuk Dalet, Vayachrechen, afterwards, Vatamod Mechama beGezer in Plishtim, there was a war that broke out between Israel and the Plishtim in the city of Gezer, or the area of Gezer. Gezer, as we mentioned before, is at the very end of Nachal Yalon, not far from Latrun today. There's a famous tell there, it's one of the big cities that Shlomo had built up. Azika Sibchai HaChushati, in that battle, Sibchai HaChushati, who were one of David's military men, et Sipai Milidei HaRafaim Vaikaneu. He was able to defeat one of the giants who were fighting with the Plishtim, and after the defeat of this giant, whose name was Sipai, or in the parallel account in Shmuel, his name was Saf, this giant was defeated by Sibchai HaChushati. After that battle, the Plishtim surrendered the area of Gezer to David. In the next several psukim, we're going to find some more examples of battles that took place where war heroes were able to defeat big giants in the Plishti army. Pasuk Hey, verse 5, Vati od mechama et Plishtim, there was another war with the Plishtim, Vayach Elchanan ben Yair, et Lachmi achi Goyat Agiti, veitz chanito kibno orgim. Here we have a story about Elchanan ben Yair. He defeated one of the giants, whose name was Lachmi, the brother of Goyat from Gath, and the size of his sword, of Lachmi, the brother of Goyat, his sword was so big that it looked like a menor orgim. The handle of the sword, which is made out of wood, was so big, because the sword was so big, that it looked like a weaver's beam. To describe how big the sword was and how big this giant was, the handle of his sword was like the size of this giant beam. If you remember from Shmuel Aleph, Perek Yedzayin, from chapter 17, and the battle of David and Goliath, the sword of Goliath was described in the exact same manner. Pasuk Vav, Vatiod Melchama Bagat, there was another battle in Gat, which is another major Plishti city, south of Gezer. Vayish Midah, there was a man who was like a giant, very big man. Vetzbotav Shesh V'Shesh, Etzim V'Arba. He was born with some birth defect, where he had six fingers and six toes on each hand and foot, and therefore he had 24 extremities. V'Gamhud Lodan L'Harafa. He also was a child born to the Rafa. This Rafa seems to be either the mother or the father of all these giants. The existence of giants in the land of Israel during that time period, we know already from Chumash in Perek Tet and Sefer Dvarim, when Moshe gives his goodbye speech, he tells Israel, Shema Yisrael, Ata Over HaYomet Yerdein, you're going to cross the Jordan River soon to go and conquer the land of Israel. And there's nations there that are much stronger than you and fortified cities. Pasuk Bet in Perek Tet, Am Gadol V'ram B'nei Anakim, great and mighty nations, B'nei Anakim, children of giants, Asher ata yadata v'ata shamata, that you heard about and know about, mit yatzev lifnei b'nei hanak, who can stand up against these children of the giants? So we see already, it was well known that there's giants living in this land, and it seems like the mother or father of these giants was someone called the Rafa, the big one or the giant one. There seems to be some group of people that were much larger than everybody else, very great warriors, and everyone was scared of them, because in battle, they were able to defeat anyone. They had these very large swords, and the fact that David HaMelech earlier was able to defeat one of them, Goliath, but that wasn't the only one. There seemed to be many giants. The record of how they were defeated was marked down as one of the great military successes. Therefore, in the book of Divrei HaYamim, we're going to record some of these victories. And here we have three examples of the defeat of giants who were in the Plishti army. Let's return now to Divrei HaYamim, Perachaf, we're in Pasuk Zayin. Vayecharef et Yisrael, this giant, who had 12 fingers and 12 toes, he taunted the people of Israel. Vayecharef et Yisrael, vayakel Yonatan ben Shima achi David. One of David's warriors named Yonatan, the son of Shima, and Shima was the brother of David. So David's nephew, Yehonatan, he was the one who was able to kill this giant. Pasachet, El Nudu laRafa Bagat, these giants who were just described, who were defeated by David's men, Nudu laRafa Bagat, they were all born to the Rafa in the city of God. Vayplu biyad David ubiyad Avadav. They fell in the hands of David and his servants. So that's the end of Perachaf. And what we have in Perachaf is not only the end of a chapter, but also the end of a unit, which talks about the military successes that David had against his two closest enemies, the nation of Ammon to the east and the Plishtim to the west. Now we need to explain, why does the book of Divrei HaYamim record these stories? How does this relate to its theme and purpose? And two, why do we have differences between the accounts here and the accounts as they're recorded in the book of Shmuel? As we explained in our introduction, our approach to Divrei HaYamim is very simple. Our claim was that this book is being written by the leaders of Israel during the beginning of the Second Temple period, the time of Haggai and Zechariah, or maybe later under Ezra and Nehemiah. And during that time period, as we see in the book of Haggai, there's a certain sense of apathy that the people feel that this is not redemption. There are a lot of reasons that lead them to that conclusion. They don't have sovereignty. They're under Persian rule. There's a lot of foreign people living in the land of Israel at the time. They're not even a majority in their land. This isn't the redemption that they were hoping for. And there's a prevalent feeling that this is not what the prophets were talking about, and nothing will come from this return from this time period of Shivat Zion. The job of the Nevim, like Haggai and Zechariah, and later leaders like Ezra and Nehemiah, were to inspire the people to see the hand of God in this partial redemption, and if they act and respond to it properly, and take a strong enough initiative, are dedicated enough to God, and also to the political growth of their community, and also to being proactive, that this partial redemption can turn into a complete redemption, which would include a return to sovereignty, and also a return to rebuilding the Beit HaMikdash in the proper manner, and a return to God as a people. With that background, it makes sense that the leaders of that generation would compose a book, the book which we call Divrei HaYamim, and the goal of that book would be to inspire the people to take advantage of the opportunities that God is now giving them. It's one of the best ways to inspire people, to show them there's an historical precedent. There was an earlier time in Jewish history where we also were faced with a lot of difficulty. We were not in a land by ourselves. We were under foreign control. We had a lot of enemies around us. Yet with God's help, and with not only strong leadership, but also dedicated soldiers and dedicated people, we were able to make tremendous accomplishments, and we were able to establish the first monarchy. The paradigm for that type of behavior was David HaMelech himself, and not just David HaMelech, but also his organization desired to build the Beit HaMikdash, and to lead the people in doing tzedek and mishpat and following God the proper way. And therefore, the author of Divrei Hayamim is going to selectively quote primarily all the attempts that David makes to build the Beit HaMikdash, but is also going to quote different military events, which on the one hand come to explain why they had not reached Menucha V'Nachala yet when David first wanted to build the Beit HaMikdash, why it wasn't time yet to build a house for God. We'll discuss that again in Perek Chavbet. But also how the people took tremendous initiative and showed bravery in all their attempts to establish themselves as a nation of God in the land of Israel. In order to accomplish that goal, we're going to find in the book of Divrei Hayamim the record of a lot of the battles, but the goal of that record is not going to be to give an organized history of everything that happened, but rather a selective quote of events that could inspire the people in the beginning of the Second Temple period to take note of ideal behavior that took place in the beginning of the First Temple period. In light of that, we can understand why we quote specifically these stories, why we talk about not only David's military battles, but how he dedicated all the booty of those battles to build a house for God, about his desire to build a house for God, about actions like Yoav and Avishai, where they say, Chazak v'nitchazek b'yarameinu b'yarare eloheinu, where they take initiative and they show bravery, but even though we're going to make our effort, he also prays that Hashem will do his side as well. And we see a beautiful balance between, on the one hand, the need to take initiative, on the other hand, to pray to God and believe that God will help you as well. And therefore, in that context, when we're talking about the battle against Ammon, there's no reason or no purpose in quoting the entire story of David and Bathsheba. In the book of Shmuel, which has a different prophetic agenda, where the goal of that book is to establish that the choice of David as king was the choice of God, and I have to prove to the people that even though there's some questionable stories about David's background, he indeed was chosen by God and he did proper tshuva and God accepted his tshuva. For the prophetic needs of the book of Shmuel, I quote the entire story of what happened in the war against Ammon. And in that account, I'm going to focus on David's sin and his repentance, because that story is important to someone who needs to know for sure that God chose David to become the king of Israel and the beginning of the royal dynasty. That's not the goal of Divrei Hayamim. Therefore, each book is going to include stories that support its prophetic goal and purpose. Our claim is not that the prophetic authors of these books are making up stories to support their claims. They're simply quoting existing stories that were known, quoting them in order to support their point. If the goal of Divrei Hayamim was to give over history, and indeed this book was supposed to be the Chronicles of Israel, then it's simply not fair to only quote the stories that you like. Then it would be necessary to quote the entire history, the good stories and the bad stories. But again, that's not the goal and purpose of the book. If the goal and the purpose of the book is to give inspiration to the nation, to take initiative, to build the Beit HaMikdash in the country, it makes perfect sense that they quote selectively from the sources that support the goal of the book. When a nation is living at a time when they're surrounded by their enemies and they form a minority in the country and the outlook is very bleak, to remind them of the historical past and great actions of leadership of the past, and that in the previous generations that Am Yisrael was able to overcome those difficulties and rose to greatness, it's for that reason that these stories are included in the book of Divrei Hayamim. In the next chapter, we're going to see the story which will lead to finding the place where the Beit HaMikdash is going to be built. And from then on, the rest of the book will focus exclusively on all the efforts that David HaMelech makes to get the Beit HaMikdash ready for his son Shlomo to build.